And I think if we tap into kids' curiosity, which is what wonderment is, if we tap into their inspiration, then we develop that sense of wonderment in children and it doesn't go away. And what I worry about is all too often it's sit down, be quiet, and do what I tell you to do, rather than allowing children to explore and to learn what they want to know about.
Welcome to the Rethinking Learning podcast series. I'm Barbara Bray. This is where I have conversations with educators, leaders, and change agents about their passion to transform teaching and learning. Welcome, everyone, to the Rethinking Learning podcast series. Today, I'm so lucky to talk to Linda Ulla. I've known Linda for a long time, and let me just tell you a little bit about her before we start. Linda Ulla has worked as a classroom teacher, a technology learning coordinator for the Challenge 2000 Multimedia Project, a teacher in residence at the KCI, I'll let you explain that, a school development coach for the New Tech Network, a coach for the Friday Institute at North Carolina State University, and a coach for personalized learning with me. So I've been really lucky. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you, Barbara.
I'm so glad you're here. This is a lot of fun because we've known each other for so long. I think in the mid-90s we met, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. And it's really been fun to follow you on your journeys. And I really, you know, just so people kind of get to know you, I'd love to have you just share about you, your family, where you live now, your travels, a little bit about you first.
Okay, well, as you know, we met back when I lived in the Bay Area. And I think I was at that point in time teaching in San Jose. I was teaching at Edenvale School. Since then, I moved to North Carolina following my grandchildren. And then now to Spokane, Washington, following my grandchildren. So I've kind of zigzagged back and forth cross country. I guess, you know, I grew up in New Jersey. I went to school in Ohio. I met my husband when I was backpacking through India and Bangladesh as a young woman. And he took me for a ride. And so we're still together. So I had my travel started, I guess, back when I was in grad school for special ed, and I had a chance to go study Italian Renaissance art in Italy, and so I took it. And so I went to a small town in Bergamo, Italy, and studied art there. And then I backpacked through, hitchhiked actually, through Europe at the time. And that sort of gave me the travel bug, and I just have not stopped traveling since. So I'm married. I have two grown sons. One works here in Spokane for the Better Business Bureau. The other one is an archaeologist at San Diego State University now. And he's now in Kazakhstan doing his field work. So this is what I love doing. And education has been, I've been an educator, Barbara, for 50 years, I figured out after I got your questions last night. So this has been my life's work and my passion, and that's sort of where I am. And I have three grandsons. They're 10, 9, and 4, and the loves of my life, and really my inspiration right now.
And, you know, since both of us have been in education for a long time, and some people go, well, when are you going to retire? Well, you know, you can't retire, right? It's like, even when you go to do your travels, you still think about education. You're looking at what do these people need and how they learn and all of those things. I follow. Where was the last place you and Dula went traveling?
The last one was Croatia. Monteverde, Slovenia, and Bosnia-Herzegovina, and Venice, Italy. That was last spring. We are heading to South America in September. So we'll be going to Chile, Argentina, and Brazil. And then we just booked a trip to Latvia, Lithuania, Poland. I'm trying to think of all the countries. Finland. There's one more in there, and I can't think what. Estonia for next spring.
Wow. You know, I'm going to just steer off because you started using my e-coach long ago and started my program, and you started putting your travels up and you figured out a way to bring in projects with that. Are you ever going to do that again? Because I thought that was really fun, you know?
Well, what I do now is I teach a course in global project-based learning, and I help teachers develop projects with their learners, with learners in other countries, other states, other places. It may just be the classroom next door to get them started. But when I travel, I visit schools. I try to see what's going on in the world in terms of education. So it's definitely a lifelong passion. And, you know, I bring back to my grandson's classrooms, each year, sort of a travel log for their classrooms that I do with them to try to inspire the kids here to want to travel, to want to see the world.
Oh, I love it. We're going to have to talk some more about that. I'm going to bring in some more of the travels with some other questions because, you know, you got me inspired. You know, I went to New Zealand and I visited some schools.
Right, that was so cool.
Well, I think what we want to do is we want to write about the schools that's happening around the world, and maybe that's something we can collaborate on how to do that. So,
well, it's interesting because it varies from country to country.
Oh, I know. And how does that relate to what we do here in the United States? And, you know, if we can help our schools, especially our grandchildren and other children out there, I love doing it.
I know you did the podcast with Paula Froberg, and I helped her connect her with the school in Kenya.
You're the one that was so, well, she's a doll, and thank you so much for introducing her to me because that's going to be a great connection, and we're going to be doing more because she's just amazing. Yeah. So I want to get to, you wrote a post in November for me, which was just amazing. But you mentioned in it a 1970 article by Neil Postman and Charles Weingartner, and it was called Teaching as a Subversive Activity. I love that title. And they pointed out the best educational environments are ones that are open-ended and inspire wonderment through interesting activities. You know, I love that idea of inspiring wonderment. I just thought it was really cool. Can you expand on how real learning provides a sense of wonderment?
Okay, so let's start with you, Barbara. Do you ever wonder about anything?
Oh, all the time. I'm very curious. That's why
I
can't stop
learning.
And I
wonder about things. Yeah. And I know my grandsons wonder about things. And when I work with kids, I see them wondering about all kinds of things. So if we think of life through the eyes of a child, children are full of wonder as they grow up. I mean, the questions that I get asked by my grandsons are just amazing, absolutely amazing. And last year, the now 9-year-old, when he was 8, came to me and he says, Grandma, do you know what a FUSA is?
I don't know what it is.
Well, apparently from the movie Madagascar, he got interested in FUSAs. Huh. And so he did a whole research thing on FUSAs, and I showed him how to do PowerPoint, and he did a whole PowerPoint on FUSAs. And now his desire is to go to Madagascar and actually see a real FUSA in life. But that came from his sense of wonderment from a movie that he had watched.
Wow.
And he learned how to do the research. He learned how to find the pictures. He learned how to do PowerPoint because of wonderment. It was his interest, what he wanted to do. And I think if we tap into kids' curiosity, which is what wonderment is, if we tap into their inspiration, then we develop that sense of wonderment in children and it doesn't go away. And what I worry about is all too often it's sit down, be quiet, and do what I tell you to do, rather than allowing children to explore and to learn what they want to know about. So I think, you know, if we help children discover their interests, their talents, what they really want to know, then we can tie it into what we know they need to know, and we can help them that way. That's what wonderment's all about, and I don't ever want to see that go away. That's why I travel.
I know.
That's, you know, every time I travel, I learn so much. And every place I go, I learn something, and then I have a new question. And that's what happens when children have wonderment. They learn something, and that develops new questions. So that's how we just keep the wonderment going, I hope.
Oh, I think this should be a wonderment movement.
I agree with you. Because when we cease to wonder, then we die inside. And there's a, I was thinking last night, there's a wonderful poem by Robert Louis Stevenson, and it's very short. And it goes, the world is full of a number of things. I'm sure we should all be as happy as kings.
Oh, I love that. Oh, we're going to put that. I am writing a post, a new one, and putting in these quotes and what you said about wonderment, because I've seen some schools where they do what they call generative curriculum based on what kids' questions. Mm-hmm. And some are doing passion-based, play-based,
Right.
But a lot of them are still teacher-directed because the teachers have a hard time. I'd love to see, how do we pull this in for professional learning for teachers? Maybe we can build that same sense of wonder for them to model.
Well, let me tell you about a high school teacher that I worked at when I was with the Challenge 2000 Multimedia Project. I was a technology learning coordinator for my district, Oak Grove District, and then for two schools in the Eastside Union High School District. And this teacher taught social studies at Oak Grove High School. He started every year with his kids, having them do a personal project on anything in the world that they were passionate about, interested in, cared about, whatever it happened to be. And it was totally open-ended. And at the end of that, he took that information, and as he taught world history, he helped those kids tie their passions, their interests, their questions, their curiosity into the history of the world.
Oh, wow.
And so their projects that they did, because this was a multimedia project where I helped teachers do multimedia projects with their classes, were all tied back to their original passion, interest project.
Oh, we have to do that again. We have to get it back.
Because, and I can't remember his name. I just remember the project.
But you started at Edenvale, or you there's some of those projects that you did there, and you wrote them in that other post. Is that kind of where you kind of spread your wings a little bit?
Yeah, I think it was. That was my renaissance in education. Like I said, I've been at this since 1967, 50 years ago, and I started out to be a high school social studies and English teacher, very traditional. I remember I did my student teaching, lecturing to a class, spit back, regurgitate the test, because that's what was expected. It never fit. It just didn't feel right to me. 3 days before school started, after having been hired to teach high school social studies and English, I was called into the superintendent's office and told I was being reassigned to third grade because they needed a coach and I couldn't coach football. So they hired somebody else in my job. I had not a clue what I was doing, Barbara. I had never worked with kids that age. I didn't know anything about elementary curriculum. I remember, I was told you teach cursive writing this year, and I thought, I teach cursing? I had no idea what was going on. I was handed textbooks and workbooks for the kids and told, this is what you will teach. I took a look at the workbooks, and they were crap. I'm sorry. They were just total crap. I couldn't do it. At the end of the year, the workbooks had not been used. I got kind of slapped on the wrist for it. But I found out that if I took the kids' interests, I could teach. And these were kids in Appalachia. And I either had kids whose fathers were engineers for the Shell plant, or I had kids who lived along the river or up in the hills who had no background in anything.
Wow.
And so I had to blend the two and get those kids motivated and interested in learning. And so we did things. We collected bugs, I remember. That was the first thing I did. And next thing I know, I had jars full of Black Widow spiders.
Oh, that's scary.
Because I had just gotten back from traveling and so forth, I got them interested in traveling the world rather than learning, here's what a community layout street looks like, draw a line through the street type thing that was in the workbook. Mm. So I did a lot of that kind of stuff and then realized that I couldn't really work with some of the kids that were struggling. And so I went back to school in special ed. And that was more of a Skinnerian time when it was, you know, every kid just behavior. Sort of separated in their own little booth. And so that didn't fit. So by the time I got to Edenvale, well, even before then, when I went back into public school special ed, because I'd worked with autistic kids for several years, I found that these kids had had year after year of the same programmed type curriculum, and it just wasn't working. And so we started just, what are your interests? So one kid was interested in scuba diving. One kid was interested in something else. And I just started naturally teaching thematically. I didn't know what I was doing. I just started doing it. But when I got to Edenvale, that's when the principal, Merle Smith, really encouraged us to teach thematically, to do projects, to think differently about education. And he was just, he was an inspiration to me. And then along came Challenge 2000, and that just, you know, really, I think that was my first real education into project-based learning.
Well, a mutual friend is Michael Simpkins, and definitely going to have Michael on this show.
Michael, he's wonderful.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
Oh, you have to have Michael. Michael taught me so much.
Yeah, he's
taught me. He really did. So to kind of expand, you had asked about Edenvale. I had an opportunity through an organization called ASTL, Art, Science, Technology, and Learning, that was out of Kiryat Simona in Israel. And that opportunity, they said, write a proposal. So I just said, my kids want to do something with water pollution. I really was very vague about it, didn't know where I was going with it. And they paired me with a high school. These were elementary kids that I was working with in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And we went to Israel, and we had wonderful trainers, you know, people that I'm still in touch with, that I still love. And there was teachers from all over the world. And the idea was to pair up a school in a developed country with a developing country school. And so we worked with all of the content areas at the high school. So the project was poetry, it was art, it was music, it was scientific investigation, it was learning about the geography of Brazil and the geography of our area. We went to the bay and we tested the water there. And I mean, the kids in Brazil tested the water in the rivers there. And so we found out about the different kinds of pollution. And I still remember the Brazilian kids wrote a report about their water. And one of the kids said to me, what's fecal matter? And I said, well, why don't you look it up? And all of a sudden, in the middle of the class, he pops out, oh, my God, they've got poop in their water. But it was a great learning experience. And we had representatives from the Brazilian Ministry of Education, from the U.S. Department of Education in our classroom. The kids were collaborating online. They wanted to see what was going on. Linda Roberts, who was the technology person at the U.S. Department of Ed, wrote in her final report that Edenvale School was doing it right.
Well, I have to tell you, because I probably need to do three or four podcasts with you, because what you're doing with what you did with Edenvale is what we need to bring back to all of our schools, because global collaboration is really important now. Yeah. And just putting these ideas out there that you just did is
Tim Cuneo, whom I think you know, was superintendent. Merle was my principal, and the two of them just created this wonderful creative atmosphere that was absolutely the Renaissance in education. And that's when Paula worked there.
So that's just because because I'm trying to, you know, make sure that we have enough time for everything.
Right, I know.
Also, I'm going to actually just kind of take what you did with Edenvale and just kind of go with some ideas here. One of the things is I see that I'm watching you. and I know you. You're so passionate about this. And it almost seems like because of your experience and your travels and the projects that you have, that this could be something to share and help teachers. And that's what you did with Paula. And I'm just wondering, you know, what is next for you? I mean, how can you work with teachers and what can we do that you can share some of these same ideas so they're inspiring wonderment?
Well, right now, through the Krauss Center for Innovation, where I continue to work online, I try to do this through my online classes and try to work with teachers that way. So that's one way. I try to volunteer at my grandson's school. And so that's another way that I'm slowly making inroads because it's a very traditional school. But, you know, just sort of beginning to get ideas into people's heads. Mm-hmm. You know, working with you with the personalized learning and that course, you know, working with those teachers throughout the country. When I worked for, you know, NewTek, that was another way that, you know, working with, again, coaching teachers, trying to get them to do that. I still am in touch with several of those teachers who are now, many of them are now coaches.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And so, yeah, and so, you know, that's another, you know, avenue that that can be explored probably. When I worked for the Friday Institute, working with school districts, those school districts were going one-to-one technology and trying to get them to understand that it wasn't about the device, it wasn't about the network, it was really about what kids do in order to learn.
Yes.
And that's what it's really all about. So what's next? I don't know, Barbara.
Yeah. Well, we're definitely going to write about some of this, and I hope that one of the things that we want to do is maybe you and I can pull some ideas on how to develop global collaborative projects like this that inspire wonderment based on their interests and passions like you talked about.
Yeah.
But at this point, I have to say, and I have to end the podcast now because of time, but I do have to say that, you know, I thought I knew you. Every time I talk to you, I learn something new, and you're amazing. And I'm so excited that you were able to kind of relive what you did at Eanvale. Just hearing your voice get so excited like that, I know what I can feel it. And so I hope that our audience understands that this is something that really not only it energizes and inspires wonderment in kids, it does that for teachers too, right?
Yeah, it does it for adults too. And I think as adults, we need to maintain our sense of wonderment if we want kids to have that sense of wonderment and maintain it.
Thank you so much, Linda.
Thank you, Barbara. This has been fun.
This was really fun. So thank you so much for joining me in Rethinking Learning Podcast with Linda Ola. And stay tuned because you're going to hear more from Linda in the future.
Oh, boy.
Bye, everyone. Thank you so much, Linda.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning podcast series and my conversation with Linda Ola. Make sure you visit us at barbarabray.net to learn more about Linda's projects, her travels, and some of the other wonderful things she was talking about. So look for a complimentary blog post, and we'll include some pictures and other resources. Please subscribe so you can join the conversations.